Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're tackling something pretty foundational for South African public finance. We're diving into the National Treasury Regulations from 2005. These really spell out how the Public Finance Management Act, the PFMA from 99, works in practice.
That's right. Our mission here is to give you a solid overview of this framework. Think of it as the main rulebook for government finances. It applies really broadly. Departments, constitutional institutions, all those public entities listed in the PFMA schedules, you know, 2, 3A, 3B, and so on. It set the standard way back in March 2005.
Okay, let's break it down. Where should we start? Maybe the core controls, the management and accountability side.
Good place to start. Part two of the regs. It mandates that every single institution has to have a chief financial officer, a CFO.
And that CFO isn't just a number cruncher, right? They report directly to the accounting officer.
Exactly. Their job is focused squarely on effective financial management, budgeting, setting up, well, really strong internal controls.
And overseeing those controls, that's where the audit committees come in.
Precisely. The regulations really emphasize their independence. These committees have to review key risk areas, evaluate how effective the internal controls are, and check the internal audit function itself. They're a critical check.
But hang on. If the accounting officer appoints the committee, how independent can they truly be in practice? That feels like a potential conflict.
It's a fair point, and it's a perennial question in governance, isn't it? The regs try to address this by setting out structural requirements for independence. Their real power, arguably, comes from their mandate to report findings on risk and controls directly to the executive authority, sort of bypassing the daily management line if needed.
Okay, that makes sense. And what about when controls, well, fail? There's a section on financial misconduct, part four, I believe.
Yes, and it's quite strict. If there's an allegation of misconduct, an investigation must be started within 30 days.
30 days? That's a very tight time frame from when it's discovered.
It is. It emphasizes swift action and accountability for past actions. But the regulations also look forward, demanding rigorous planning and budgeting.
Right, the strategic planning aspect. Institutions need 3-year strategic plans.
Yes, and crucially, these plans must align with the medium-term expenditure estimates. It connects the long-term vision to the actual budget cycle.
And within that budget cycle, there are strict rules, especially about unspent funds, the rollovers.
Very strict. And this detail tells you a lot about the intent. Money allocated for compensation of employees' salaries basically cannot be rolled over to the next year, period.
Why is that specific rule there?
Well, it prevents departments from, say, delaying hiring to save salary money and then using that cash for something else entirely, like equipment or travel. It protects the staffing budget. For other things, goods and services, there's a cap. You can only roll over a maximum of 5% of the unspent funds.
And the overall aim here is preventing what the regs call UIFFWE, unauthorized, irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure.
Exactly. And they are distinct. Irregular is spending that breaks the rules even if you got value. Wasteful is spending where you got no value, even if you followed the process. Unauthorized is spending without approval. The system demands transparency to detect and prevent all of them.
That need for transparency carries right through into the big operational areas in Part 6, doesn't it? Like supply chain management, SCM.
Absolutely. The SCM system itself must be, and these are the key words, fair, equitable, transparent, competitive, and cost-effective.
And there are ethical rules baked in.
Very much so. Any official with a potential conflict of interest, like a private stake in a bidding company, must declare it immediately and step away from the process completely.
That seems straightforward enough for standard procurement.
Yeah.
What about the really complex deals, like public-private partnerships, PPPs?
Ah, PPPs. They get special attention because of the scale and long-term risk. The regulations demand a multi-stage approval process directly involving National Treasury.
Multi-stage. How's that work?
There are three key Treasury approval gates. TA1 requires a detailed feasibility study proving the project is affordable and offers value for money compared to traditional procurement.
Okay, step one is feasibility. What's next?
Then you have Treasury Approval 2, which is actually split sometimes, IIA and IIB. This covers the whole procurement phase, choosing the private partner, the bidding process, very detailed scrutiny.
And the final step.
Treasury Approval 3. That's needed before the final PPP contract can actually be signed. So multiple checks along the way.
Right. So pulling it all together, what we're seeing is this incredibly comprehensive net. It covers, well, almost everything financial, from how a CFO is appointed right down to how you write off a small debt.
It really standardizes financial conduct across a huge range of public bodies.
So as we wrap up, what's the big takeaway, the final thought for our listeners?
I think if you look beyond the individual rules, the central theme is risk minimization across every single area. It's not just about stopping fraud, though that's crucial. It's about managing losses from claims against the state or even from these major, you know, unavoidable events like floods or disasters. The framework forces institutions to think about, document, and manage risk constantly, whether that's a massive multi-billion rand PPP or something as routine as ensuring correct deductions on the personal payroll system. It's all about anticipating and managing financial risk. That's the core lesson here.